From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to this Monday edition of Washington Watch. I am your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in today for Tony and coming to you live from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is the site of this week's RNC Platform Committee meeting and also next week's Republican National Convention. Glad to have you on board with us. Let me share with you some of the things that will be coming up today on Washington Watch.
Well, I think our platform has to reflect our nominee. And our nominee's position is actually happens to be one grounded in reality. The reality of it is the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, and what that basically means is that now it's not states, it's voters at individual states who will get to decide how and to what level they want to restrict abortion, if at all.
Of course, that was Republican Senator Marco Rubio yesterday on CNN's State of the Union talking about the GOP platform. And there's a lot, obviously, to unpack there, and we will do so a little bit later in the program. But earlier today, the RNC Platform Committee adopted the 2024 GOP platform, which is the first platform since the Dobbs decision overturned Roe v. Wade. Now, while the 2024 platform, which, by the way, advanced by a vote of 84-18, so it was a pretty overwhelming vote today, 84-18. It does establish that the GOP opposes late-term abortion, but it totally fails to call for a constitutional amendment or for any federal laws protecting the unborn. And in just a moment, FRC's President Tony Perkins, who is a member of the platform committee, he will be joining me here in just a moment to share with us what went down today, so you don't want to miss that. All right, and from a policy perspective, as well as a moral perspective, there are obviously some serious concerns about the party platform that was adopted today. How in the world did we get here? Well, Brent Kylan, Vice President for Strategic Initiatives here at FRC and FRC Action, he will be joining me for that conversation a little later in the program. And as we consider this whole platform, the one that was just adopted today, there are some major questions that are hitting all of us, such as, what is this going to mean heading into November? What's it going to mean for the elections? Will social conservatives, probably more accurately stated, will biblical conservatives feel inclined to abandon the GOP, just as many of them feel that the GOP abandoned them today? Well, we'll be talking about that with Chad Connolly of Faith Wins. For those of you who know Chad, he's a strong advocate for Christian and pro-life values, and he himself was, in fact, removed from the RNC Platform Committee, and he'll be sharing some of that story as well. And you may be asking, what else is in the platform or what is missing from this 2024 GOP platform? What policies does it contain that might, perhaps, energize the Sage Cons, the spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives? Travis Weber, FRC's Vice President for Policy and Government Affairs, will be joining me to break all that down. So, friends, we've got a packed show coming your way. And, of course, as you can tell, it's centering on the platform that was adopted today. If you happen to miss any portion of today's program, please, you can catch it at going to our website, TonyPerkins.com. Tons of available resources there available for you, TonyPerkins.com. All right, let's jump in to the top story for today. As I mentioned, the GOP adopted its first party platform since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade after nearly 50 years of efforts from pro-life advocates. And now we come to the 2024 platform, which basically abandons protections for the unborn that the party has championed since the mid-1980s. Well, joining me now to discuss this is Family Research Council President and your regular host of the Washington Watch program here. He is also an RNC Platform Committee member, and he was there today. He was obviously, as you well know, among the top leaders pushing for pro-life and pro-family language in the platform, Tony Perkins. Tony, thank you for joining us.
Jody, thanks for sitting in today. It's been kind of a busy day.
It has been a busy day, and to say disturbing is an understatement.
Well, you win some, down? You lose some, and today, unfortunately, the unborn did not necessarily win. What we have, I think, in this platform is very unique, different than any of I've seen before. I think it's a fairly decent statement of a campaign's priorities, but not the enduring principles of a party. All right, and I think that's a change. Now, maybe that's where they want to go with it. If that is, then that's fine for the campaign. And it's not a bad document from a standpoint of, you know, it says anything really bad. It doesn't really say a whole lot. It's very broad language. And that's what my background is more policy focused, Jody. And so I think, for instance, it talks about the sanctity of marriage, but it doesn't define what marriage is.
Right.
And let me just read, you made reference to the life language. And let me kind of read this so we can explain to people why this matters. And by the way, we've talked about this on the program, but these platforms are followed by policymakers at every level of government. You know, 80% of the time plus, Republicans have followed their platform.
And that's federal and state.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Across the board.
Right. So these are guiding documents. So they're not insignificant. I know a lot of people say, well, why worry about it? Well, because it is a statement of principle that gives direction.
Right.
So here's what it says on life. We proudly stand for families and life. We believe that the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States guarantees that no person can be denied life or liberty without due process, and that the states are therefore free to pass laws protecting those rights. After 51 years, because of us, that power has been given to the states and to a vote of the people. We will oppose late-term abortion while supporting mothers and policies that advance prenatal care, access to birth control, and IVF, fertility treatments. All right, so there's a lot in that, but not a lot of specificity. If you look at what has been there in the past, that 14th Amendment does not state for the unborn as it has in previous years. Let me read what's been in the platform since 1984. We therefore affirm our support for a human life amendment to the Constitution. That's gone. And we endorse legislation to make clear that the 14th Amendment's protection apply to unborn children. This platform doesn't do that.
Wow. Okay, so I posed this question a little bit earlier, but, you know, what does this do for Christians who feel like the party's left them on this 50-year battle?
Well, I'm asking myself that same question, Jody. But here,
we all are. I mean, let's be honest.
It's a political party. Like, you and I have both been pastors. We've been in churches, and we know that even churches sometimes get going in the wrong direction. This is a political party prone to taking the wrong direction. It's discouraging from that standpoint of all of the work for decades that has brought this party to the place of championing the unborn. Look, I'm going to continue to champion the unborn.
Yes, we are.
Because I believe that this is one of the things that has, I think it has stayed the hand of judgment upon this nation, because there has been an element, a remnant, that has been working to correct what was done wrong. And, you know, we had the Dobbs decision, you made reference to. I think that was the Supreme Court repenting. But we have not done the work of repentance. In fact, we're seeing a political class do the opposite of making apologies for being pro-life. And so what do we do? Well, number one, we have to redouble our efforts as it pertains to standing for human life, supporting mothers in crisis pregnancies, adopting children, promoting these policies at the state level, but still advocating and pointing out that this idea that this is just a state's issue is logically flawed, because we've seen with the abortion pill now, 70% of abortions, like Senator Rubio. I know you got a clip to play.
Yeah, I want to play that for you.
Let's just go play that, because I...
Yeah, all right. Let's put up clip three. I really wanted to get your reaction to this.
I don't think there's much of an option here. It looks like no matter who the Democrats nominate, it looks like maybe Kamala Harris would be the most liberal presidential candidate in American history, or a continuation of whoever's running the White House now with Joe Biden as its figurehead. The issue is that they are going to be radical. There's only one pro-life candidate in this race.
Well, so here, I have a policy, Jody.
There's a lot here.
Yeah, I have a policy. I don't say publicly, I don't speak publicly about those who we communicate with until I talk to him privately. I text Senator Rubio after that clip yesterday and expressed that I was stunned that he is now supportive of removing the Human Life Amendment out of the platform. Basically saying that the reason is that, you know, look, it was never going to happen. Well, it's aspirational. It's a goal. That's the difference between a campaign platform and stating the
piece of legislation.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this is what we are.
It's what we're sure of. We are recognizing as a party the rights of the unborn child, and so we aspire to get this nation to that place. And that is a capitulation. And to say that the party platform is always reflective of the candidate is simply not true. Bob Dole in 1996 rejected the platform. He said, that's not my platform. John McCain wrote his own platform because he didn't like the RNC platform. Romney pushed back against the platform. But Donald Trump in 2016 embraced the party platform. It wasn't his. It was the party's. It was a reflection of the grassroots, and he embraced it. That historically has been what the party platform has been. It has been a platform for the party, not the candidate.
Right. And it has a rippling effect, not just on the federal level, but across the state.
Right.
You take it out. I mean, what then do even the state legislatures have to fight for if it's not part of the Republican Party? What do you think, Tony, what will be the impact of this on voters, on enthusiasm across the board?
I can only say that, unfortunately, I think it dampens enthusiasm. I mean, we still have a sharp contrast between the two candidates, but, you know, I think, like, just look at the amount of time we've had to spend that we would spend on other activities trying to keep the party from, you know, doing self-hurt. You know, self-harm, crisis intervention here. And we're spending a lot of time, money, and resources on this, and that's money that could have been spent somewhere else. So I do think it is going to have an impact to the degree, I don't know what, but the elections are so close, we can't afford any deviation. But look, Jody, we need to continue to pray. We need to continue to vote. We need to continue to stand. I do think, and I want our listeners and viewers to understand, because you're going to hear stuff in the press, and you know, and some of you watching and listening are going to be critical, saying, well, you're hurting Donald Trump's chances. That's not my intention. I was trying to help him, and there's been hours upon hours of conversations prior to this public display of opposition to help them come to the right place. I'm just going to say up front, I've said it before, but I cannot compromise biblical truth to advance a temporal political objective. I won't do it. I just can't do it.
Well, and Tony, that resolve right there is the leadership that we have come to love and appreciate with you, not only here at FRC, but across this country. And people look at you and they look at FRC and they know what guides us and what guides you are those biblical principles, not putting a thumb up to see what the polls are, the direction of the people. It is what does God's word have to say. That's where we're going to stand. And I thank you so much for listening. I know you're busy. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you,
Jody. We appreciate it so much. All right, friends, we've got much, much more coming your way on Washington Watch, specifically as it relates to this platform debate and all that went down today. There's many different angles to look at it, many different ways to try to wrap our brain and our heart around it, and we'll do it right after this break. Stay tuned.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, SageCon, to learn more. That's SageCon, SageCon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
I'm a stand member.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you joining us today. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, coming to you live from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is the site of this week's RNC Platform Committee meeting. As you just heard earlier today, the Republican Party adopted its 2024 platform, and I don't know how else to say it, but it disappointed many pro-life conservatives. I think that's probably a very mild way of saying it. Because they abandoned much of the language that the party has followed since the 1980s when it comes to protecting the life of the unborn. But it was not just today's outcome that was disturbing. Also disturbing was the process itself, how it all went down. And joining me now to discuss this and where we go from here is Brent Kylan. He's the Vice President for Strategic Initiatives here at the Family Research Council and FRC Action. Brent, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you.
Appreciate it, Jody.
All right. So your reaction today to the platform that was adopted?
Well, like you said, there's the product, but there's also the process. And, you know, what I saw about the process today, definitely some concerning things there, you know, just to say it. You know, I was there in 2016 in Cleveland, got to watch the process play out there. Just very, very different. Of course, we had COVID 2020, so they just readopted what was adopted in 2016. But this year versus 8 years ago, just as a comparison, what typically historically happens is, you know, each state gets their two platform delegates. So you have that. Typically, the process plays out over 2 days, Monday, Tuesday, and Sunday night when they check in, when they get their credentials, all of that, they're given that platform to look at to see, okay, how do I feel about this? Do I feel like it needs to be amended? Because you know, Jody, as a legislator, you need time to process something that you are right. voting on. This year, much of that just simply did not happen. Delegates were not given a platform until literally while they were sitting there this morning. So they didn't get it before, didn't have a chance to read it beforehand. And then that process that typically plays out over 2 days was half a day. And so you were asking delegates.
So it was all over.
Yeah,
half a day.
Yeah. And no, typically there are five or six subcommittees, so they can really say, okay, let's analyze this. Let's have some discussion just to make sure there's nothing being left out, make sure we as a national party, you know, are really good with this. No subcommittees at all. There was no subcommittee. In fact, you know, being a guest in there today, there were delegates going to the mic and saying, hey, I actually thought I was going to be part of a subcommittee process first, like what's going on there. And so it happened extremely fast. Wow. And so just those parts of the process matters too. And the thing about that also is precedent. And I'm like, you know, openness and transparency as a precedent is just so important.
Yeah, you know, I think while my time in Congress, one of the things that aggravated my constituents, and I think Republican voters all across the country, as much as anything else, was when we would get a 1,500 page piece of legislation 2 or 3 hours before we're voting on it, where none of us had time to read of it. We didn't know what was in it. And we always gripe about Nancy Pelosi's famous comment to pass it and then find out what's in it. But we do the same thing. It sounds very much like that's what took place even today in the platform.
Yeah, I mean, the delegates were given the platform to look at. While they're trying to read it, there's also discussion going on. So it's not even like a quiet room. And then they immediately had to vote on it after, wow. I don't know if it was an hour or whatnot. I didn't have that. We were all asked to check our phones and things like that. And so it's just, you want to make sure they have a chance to analyze these delegates. Many of them traveled. I mean, you've got all 50 states,
right.
Plus,
that's a whole nother point.
You know,
yeah.
They spent a lot of time, energy to get here, and they need to make sure they're comfortable with what they're asked to be to vote on. And I think, you know, Tony was talking about this, but there really is kind of a short term and a long term approach you have to factor in when it's the platform. Yeah, the short term, the election, we get that. You know, that's a factor here. But also the fact that this is the long term precedent. I was talking to a Republican official today who was talking about this at the state level, and they said, we adopted this new platform at the state level, and then our state legislators came up to us and started saying, we're introducing bills because this is what's in our platform now. And so that long term precedent is just so important. And you just
great
can't
point.
You can't lose that aspect of it.
No, that's a really great point. And the impact of a platform, Tony was talking about in the previous segment, has a tremendous impact on the legislators, obviously. Some 80%+ of the time they vote in accordance with the platform. But it also has an enormous impact on the voters. Voters really do look at the platforms and they compare parties largely mm-hmm. on this. So, you know, when you look at the voters out there, do you see any, do you have a thermometer to kind of gauge what kind of impact this might have on the voters, where they feel like things that we've been fighting for decades all of a sudden removed?
It's going to be interesting to see that there's still some good stuff in there. No denying that. There's also stuff that's been in there for about 50 years that isn't there anymore. To me, the other piece of the equation is, you know, the Democrat Party will adopt theirs next month, and it will be really interesting to see what that contrast is. There probably will be a stark contrast, but some of those issues, you know, polling done back in 2016, for example, 59% of Trump voters said that the party's strong positions on life and religious liberty had an impact on their vote. And so it really does make that difference. So it's just going to be interesting to see how people respond to that.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the exact numbers, but I know that there's polling that's been done that would indicate 2/3+ of Republicans say that these specific issues do have a major impact
yes.
on how they're going to vote. And now I join you in wondering what kind of impact is this going to have as we come into November, and I guess it's all up for grabs to see when it all gets there. Well, Brent, I want to thank you for being here, for being a part of the platform discussion. This is a disturbing day, not only for what is not in the platform, but the whole process why this came about. And I'm still scratching my head as to how it went down like that. Any final thoughts as we wrap up here?
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of doing the same thing, Jody. So it moved really, really fast. But yeah, we'll see kind of what plays out in the days ahead for sure.
All right, Brent Kylan, thank you so much for joining
us. Appreciate it, Jody. Thank you.
All right, we will be joined by Chad Conley with Faith Wins coming up here in just a few moments after the break. Chad was actually on the platform committee, and he was removed from the platform committee. He'll be talking a little bit more about that as we continue this special edition talking about the Republican platform. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more right after this.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to this Monday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, coming to you live from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which, of course, is the site of this week's RNC Platform Committee meeting. And as we've been discussing all about the 2024 GOP platform, how it's really been watered down, both in terms of content and the process by which it all came about, I also want to bring our next guest to you. I'm joined by Chad Conley. He's the founder of and CEO of Faith Wins. He was actually on the RNC Platform Committee, and then he was removed from it. He joins me now to share some of his experiences. Chad, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you, my friend.
Hey, Jody. How you doing, my brother? Great to see you and honored to be on here as usual, brother.
Well, it is our honor to have you. Let's start with, we've mentioned it a couple of times today, you were actually on the platform committee and you were removed. Share with us your experience and explain a little bit how all that happened.
Yeah, literally, you know, I'm a former state party chairman, a senior staffer at the RNC, first ever national director of faith engagement. But about a week before our delegation meeting, which was perfunctory, we've done them in the past, our state party chairman, Drew McKissick, set it up, ran it, everything else. Some Trump mid-level consultants started calling my fellow delegates saying I was too conservative, too Christian, too pro-life. And they did the same with LaDonna Riggs, who works on my Faith Wins team with me and who's actually been a platform representative on the female side for South Carolina three separate times. And we were just too conservative. And so we didn't think much about it because these are my buddies, right? These are delegates who helped me get elected twice here. And they were, of course, calling me saying, what is going on? I'm like, man, I got no idea. And so we went ahead and had our meeting. We ran against the quote unquote handpicked slate and we beat them. And they had run a fake meeting. The meeting was not called by the state party. It was called by RNC staffers. It was they didn't even take a roll call. They had delegates and alternates vote in the meeting. They didn't give 24 hours notice. They broke pretty much every rule in the state party and the RNC book, but they went ahead and did that. When our state party chairman submitted our names for platform committee, they filed a protest, which went to the contest committee at the Republican National Committee, and who, again, people that I've known for a while since I was on the committee, and I don't know what they were promised, but they voted against us. They validated the other people who were just, I hate to say it, but just yes people put in place. Well, we filed a protest per RNC rules. There's supposed to be an oral hearing. They denied that. Then they just scrapped the entire hearing process, Jody. They just ignored it. And I've talked to probably three dozen RNC members. You and Brent were just talking about the process. The process was completely wiped out. This cake was baked. They had a desire to just roll through this, steamroll everybody who disagreed from the vote 84 to 18. You can tell. I don't know. I've talked to so many people in that world, and I'm like, there's nobody I know of who's against President Trump. Everybody I know realizes the country can't take four more years of Joe Biden. At the same time, the process matters, the platform matters. And based on what I've seen the last 72 hours, Jody, it's not an exaggeration. I am positive I've had over 100 phone calls, many more hundred texts, and I don't know how many hundreds, easily over 1,000 pastors from all over the country have messaged me in one shape or form, concerned about this, the process and the outcome, and disappointment, betrayal, shock, all those words are the adjectives I'm hearing. I've been on the phone all day today. I don't usually do phone calls on Sunday. I go to church and worship and have family time. I took, I don't know, over a dozen phone calls yesterday from concerned pastors who are now like, what do we do? And how do we handle this? And well, of course, as you know, Jody, most pastors don't endorse, but they do want to have a platform they can stand by.
Yeah, that is the question, Chad, with all of this is, I don't know how much of the program you've been able to catch today, but we've talked about this whole platform and specifically the life issue from a moral perspective. We've talked about it from a policy perspective, but what you're leading into is a political perspective. This very likely is going to have some political ramifications. If you're getting 1,000 text messages from pastors across the country, that's pretty alarming, isn't it?
Well, listen, yeah, and they just don't know how to react. And like I said, they don't necessarily want to endorse, but many, many, many of them have used platform comparisons to teach their people. And you know, Jody, you've heard me speak. We don't talk about party or person or whatever. We talk about policies and principles that line up with a biblical worldview. But from what it looks like, and I've not fully digested it, we just reversed 48 years of a pro-life trajectory. And I think the wording is vague enough that we can stand on it. Certainly, I'm thrilled they kept the 14th Amendment language. But on marriage, it looks like it's really vague. And I'm glad I wasn't there. We got to answer to people for this. I think it's a political miscalculation. I told people on the RNC, that look, you're right. I know what they're thinking. Christians have nowhere else to go. I get that, like you said. However, I heard from more than many, many pastors who said this very thing. Yeah, I'll probably vote for the right guy, but do I want to go work for this? Do I want to stand in my pulpit and make a declaration of this is obvious who you should vote for? I think the base is going to be deflated in a lot of ways, and the people who could be multiplying, I don't see them wanting to multiply their efforts.
And right, all of this so avoidable and so unnecessary. Yeah. Chad Conley with Faith Wins, thank you so much for standing in the gap for us, and thank you for taking time to join us today on Washington Watch.
Thank you, brother. God bless you, Jody. Thanks for standing.
All right, friends, much more coming your way on Washington Watch. We're coming to you live from Milwaukee. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this break.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, coming to you live from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is the site of the RNC Platform Committee this week and the Republican National Convention that will be taking place here next week. All right, as we've been discussing throughout the program, the party adopted its 2024 platform earlier today. It's a 16-page document. I was able to read through it earlier this afternoon myself. It's only about a quarter of the length of previous party platforms, by the way. But we've also covered how the platform has abandoned protections for the unborn, frankly, protections that have been there in every party platform since the 1980s. But before we go today, I think it's important for us to discuss this platform as it relates to other important issues, particularly issues that are important to the SageCons, to the spiritually active, governance-engaged individuals. Joining me now to discuss this is Travis Weber. He's the Vice President for Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Jody. It's good to be on.
All right. So before we get into some of the specifics of some of these other issues I want to cover, just give me your 30,000-foot perspective of the platform today.
Yeah. So I was able to observe the process that unfolded today, and you know, there were several things that really struck me about it. One was just the tight rein of it was really a feeling of control that was being exerted upon the whole process. And these are delegates that are selected to represent the interests of the people in a national gathering of the Republican Party to determine what policy positions the party will determine it wants to rally around. That should be a process with input, with collaboration, involving collaboration, involving hearing the perspectives of the delegates. None of that was present. And it was abundantly clear that there was an agreement behind whoever was running things today, that they wanted to retain a tight control on things and stop that. Well, you make that decision, you get what happened. You get a frustrated group of people who are not feeling heard in a process in which they should feel heard. So that was very clear. I think it was a missed opportunity, and it was very disappointing because no one's fooling anyone. Everyone knows when someone is trying to ram something down their throat, and it was very clear that this was being rammed down the throats of everyone there today.
Yeah, and we've had some other guests who are on with us today. Some people have come from all over the country, some serving on different committees, subcommittees, this, that, and the other, and they come here for what typically is going to be a couple of days process, and within a couple of hours, it's over. And I've spoken with people today who literally said, why am I here? I spent all this money. We've come here. We didn't even have subcommittee meetings. It's just done. It's over.
Jody, these are in many cases elected officials, and upon entry, they had to place their phones in a bag so they couldn't access their cell phones.
You couldn't use it in there, right?
Meanwhile, this is being discussed in the discussion this morning. This point's being raised, and Senator Blackburn is asked why staff, the RNC staff, get to have their phones, and she said, well, they have to work. That's not a reason. It made no sense. It was baffling. It was bizarre, and it made a mockery of – it disrespected the people who were selected to go here. So in my observation, the process was in shambles, and – you know, you look at the document that was produced, agreed upon today. There's some good things in this document.
Sure.
I think you'd actually have more people rallying around it if they didn't feel so stepped on and disrespected in this entire process.
Yeah, and I felt the same thing. My reaction reading through this afternoon, I thought, okay, this is good stuff. It did sound, and I believe Tony referenced this and put it in this frame earlier, that it came across more as a campaign document rather than a platform of the party. And that's how I felt reading it. It sounded like I'm reading a campaign speech. There's some good stuff in there, but it's a lot of fluff too, quite frankly.
There is, I agree. You know, the way in which this comes across is campaign driven and almost aimed at winning an election in November. It's understandable, obviously. Everyone understands that.
Election.
It's an important election. And I don't really think people who are involved in analyzing what happened today are against President Trump. That's an unfortunate kind of feeling that's out there. But the reality is they're against the way in which the process was being so iron-fisted. There was a perception of the reality of an iron fist around the process. And so you know, I think it's an observation we make about what was produced, campaign driven, but let's, you know, and we can look at it, but the reality is that we have to, it's an important point that this document transcends any one election.
Right.
Right. And so we have to distinguish that from a campaign, but even if we look at what's in it, I mean, I'm just looking at a version right now. We could look at school choice, parental rights, addressing the issue of CRT and gender indoctrination. They go through banning taxpayer funding for gender transition procedures, combating anti-Semitism, empowering American families, defending religious liberty. This is a list
taxes,
of some good stuff.
Economic stuff, the
right.
Border, there's good stuff. But, you know, Travis, let's go back, because I was shocked at the size, how much smaller this is from previous platforms. So let's talk about this. If you can, kind of give us a perspective of this platform compared to previous platforms, say 2016 when President Trump first came. Let's talk about the difference of this and other platforms.
Yeah, I mean, it's much shorter. A lot of the substance is contained in one or two lines. It does not have descriptions of what the party will pledge to do around a certain issue. So in one sense, it's harder to get our minds around what's the actual position of the party. Now, sometimes that's clear. I mean, it's clear, okay, no taxpayer funding for gender transition. I agree. It's a good policy. But let's look at another area. There's only two mentions of God in this platform. There was 15 mentions in 2016. That's a big reduction. And I think it's very important. We have to honor God in our nation. And it was also something that struck me about the process today. God was not given a place of honor in that room. It was like everything was focused on the election. We live with the under the grace of God here, and we really need to make sure we have integrity when we're saying things about that. We need to not take that lightly, not use it for our own purposes. We cannot use that for an election. And it's very dangerous when we start to do that. And so I was struck and concerned about the reduction in God being mentioned in the platform, but also very concerned about the way God was not honored. He was not given a place of honor. He was used in the discussion this morning. But just to return to your question about this, you know, about the platform, Jody, you know, clearly there's some good stuff in it. We have to recognize that. And I've been going through that, but if you look at the life issue, clearly it's already been discussed, but really gutted. The 14th Amendment is mentioned, but it's not explicitly tied to protection for the unborn. And it's concerning that birth control and IVF are being pushed, right, with the concerning ethical implications in both of those areas. In addition, significant areas were taken out that were in 2016. No taxpayer funding for Planned Parenthood, and no mention of Hyde Amendment, basically about taxpayer funding for abortion domestically or Mexico City policy globally. Those are no-brainers to have in. The American people clearly support not sending our taxpayer dollars to those. I don't know why they were taken out. That's not good, though. I don't think it makes sense. I think they should be included in part of any conservative set of policy proposals. They're discussing gender transition, so why not apply the same principle, no taxpayer funding to abortion? So there's, in terms of the comparison, big sections that are left as black holes. There's no international religious freedom discussion in the current platform text as well. And in addition to that, you know, there's really not a lot of language about the role the United States can play as a beacon of light globally, proclaiming goodness, protecting human rights as a beacon of virtue globally. That's important. We have to use our national power for that, to bless others in other nations. A lot of the language just on it just cut that out. It didn't discuss that. It kind of was focused on America and the strength of America, a lot of the economic focus. Understandably, we need to be strong or we can't help others, but there's a purpose to being strong, and we have to recognize that purpose is given to our nation by God, and we have to honor him in seeking to continue to fulfill that purpose.
Absolutely. And a couple of other things that jumped out to me in going through it that were mentioned, but just on such a surface, it was just weak, was the issue of marriage. I made a reference to something about the sanctity of marriage, but it didn't define what marriage was. As it didn't say anything about being between a man and a woman. I mean, either side could embrace that. And the same with Israel. There was nothing really about Israel except we will stand with Israel. Well, I know in the past we've been pretty straightforward on those type of issues.
Yeah, Jody, both those areas were really reduced. I'm looking at the marriage language now. It's Republicans will promote a culture that values the sanctity of marriage, the blessings of childhood, the foundational role of families, and supports working parents. We will end policies that punish families. Okay, nothing really bad about that, but it leaves gaps. It leaves wiggle room for people to massage and manipulate the language and say, well, marriage, that includes marriage between a man and a man. That's right. Not how God defines marriage. We don't have the authority to change marriage in that way. And all of a sudden now, the Republican Party platform has not clarified that.
Right.
So we have departed from a recognition of what God says about it. There's a separation. And once we lose our mooring and our anchor to what God says about it, you're adrift. That's a dangerous place to be.
Yep.
And that is adrift. Again, nothing wrong in a negative sense here, but it's adrift. And it allows a hole, it leaves gaps and wiggle room for people to push policies that are clear, even more, that are harmful through the language here.
And similar thing with Israel, I thought.
Yeah.
Basically just said, as I recall, a comment that we will stand with Israel. And I'm thinking, well, I mean, right now Israel's in a war. I mean, we're dealing with Hamas. And all we can say is we'll stand with Israel. What does that even mean?
We could have been a lot clearer. They could have been a lot more clear on that. Again, it's very minimal. That leaves a lot of wiggle room for people to propose their own policy for what that means. And as Christians, we should be very clear. We should seek to be very clear about our stance with Israel, especially in light of the times where hostility all around the world is growing. We've seen that very, very clear domestically. So the Republicans had a chance to clarify that as well. I agree. We need to be very strong and clear about that.
Well, there was a lot of other things. I know our time's kind of slipping away, but there were some good things about protecting children, women's sports, that type of thing, that the Republicans would take a stand against that type of thing. Overall, though, what are you hearing from other people as you've been in and out of the crowd talking with people? What are you hearing, be it about the process or about the document itself?
Yeah, I mean, Jody, we've already discussed a little bit about the process, but it's been a point of discussion that it's quite ironic that the two times today there was a point made from one of the experts that were selected to go and present on content. And look, nothing against the experts. They seem knowledgeable in their fields, but that's not the point. The point is, as we've already discussed, this should have been a deliberative process. And instead, everyone has marched in. Their phones are basically functionally put out of use for them, and they're forced to listen to speeches about why they should support this. And then those speeches are tied with pressure tactics to, you need to support the president's reelection. No one in there is opposing the president. They're just seeking to be honored and respected and around the table.
Right.
You know, it's a deliberative process. They want a good platform, right? And so, that was not the sense of things, you know. And it was highlighted at two points where one of the experts made a point about protecting free speech, needing to deal with censorship that liberal Dems are pushing. Meanwhile, they're doing this in an iron-fisted process where phones are functionally confiscated, and they're taking pictures of people based on how they're voting, and the RNC staff's running around with green signs saying "vote yes." It was mockery of things. This is just for me observing it. I'm not even really participating. I'm observing this. What do you think people are going to think? You can't even sit there and talk about free speech when the process is conducted that way. So it needs to be called out and recognized. That's just a fact. I mean, that was a fact of what happened today.
Okay. We've only got about a minute or so left. Real quickly, where does this go from here? Does this now go to the convention next week for final approval, or is it done? And how can our viewers and listeners best pray at this point?
Well, look, I mean, we're raising concerns because we have to be honest. We cannot ignore things that we believe are essential for the blessing and flourishing of our nation. But again, we're in the conservative community. We want to be supportive. We just have to recognize we have to be in this together and recognize God in the place of honor and recognizing him in this process. So in terms of moving ahead, I think it's important to frame things that way. I think if people will kind of correct the imbalances that have risen where people not being heard around the table here and make those corrections, I think some of this could be addressed. I think we're going to continue to engage as we have engaged the Platform Integrity Project, but it'll be, you know, the final text will be, finally ratified at the convention, but we're going to continue to engage to highlight the issues that we believe are essential, because these we believe are essential for the blessing of our nation. It's not about us, but it's about the flourishing of the nation so we can be a blessing to the world.
Well, and this is a time, Travis, and I know you agree, that we need the body of Christ stepping up, engaging this thing, praying for our country, praying for the convention as they meet next week. This is a time for the church to have her finest hour. And
yes,
to step
we need to ask the Lord for his help.
Absolutely. Yeah. Travis, thank you so much for joining
thank
us.
Thank you.
I appreciate this discussion so much. All right, friends, that wraps up this edition of Washington Watch, coming to you live from Milwaukee. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.